Thank you, Dwayne. There are those people who cross your path, who inspire you by their example and encourage you by the way that they offer things to you. And Dr. Elizabeth Beard has been one of those for me. Liz and I went to Rapids High School together. Liz was 2 years ahead of me and was someone I looked up to through my high school years. A strong student, everybody's friend, a great leader of our school as student council president, and then Miss Rapids High School her senior year. Liz was a role model for everybody. When I ran for student council president as a would-be junior against a would-be senior, big election, Liz was kind enough to deliver a nomination speech for me as the outgoing student council president. And I'm certain that her matriarchal blessing is what won the day for me. I went on to serve as student council president for 2 years, for junior and senior years. Now, all of that, even though it's from a long, long time ago now, is why I'm interested in hearing what Liz has to share. But she's not just Liz anymore. She's Dr. Elizabeth Beard, and she's done some great stuff since high school. Since 2005, Liz has been teaching in the English department at LSUA. Her areas of teaching and research include composition, American literature, Southern literature, and women's studies. Liz received her bachelor's degree in English and secondary education from Spring Hill College in Mobile, Alabama, and her master's and doctorate degrees in English from Louisiana State University. She's the founding coordinator of the LSUA Writing Center. In her teaching philosophy, Dr. Beard says, a key aspect of my teaching involves guiding students through meta-learning, asking them to consider the value of what we're studying and how these skills are transferable. Reading and writing with purpose are empowering, and I love leading my students to that discovery. Liz's husband, William Beard, is a physician assistant with Rapids Physicians Group. They have two sons. Ben is a senior, and Charles is an eighth grader, both of them at Holy Savior Menard in Alexandria. Would you join me in welcoming Dr. Elizabeth Beard?
Okay, perfect. Can you hear me okay? We're good? All right, thank you. Well, Stuart, I feel important now. I feel that way on a regular basis. Thank you so much for having me here today. I see a lot of my local heroes in this room, people I really admire and respect, colleagues that I think the world of. And so it's an honor to be here today, and I appreciate you listening to this little old lady. I'm not really that much older than Stuart. I'm not the matriarch, right? Just the senior. But anyway, anybody else from Rapids High School? Anybody else with Rapids connections? I love that. As I was prepping for this, I like, you know, little old Rapids High School in LeCount, Louisiana, and some good things come out of small places, huh? Good stuff. All right. I just wanted to point out a little bit about what I do at LSUA on a daily basis. In the English department, we're on a 4-4 teaching load, so I teach four English classes from the 1,000 level all the way up to the areas of my specialty at the 4,000 level that Stuart mentioned. And I also coordinate the Writing Center, which is a free tutoring service for students in any course that involves writing. So on a daily basis, I'm in the business of providing feedback, right? And my context is different from yours. I'm in an academic setting. You know, I'm in the business of growing students and learning and trying to empower them. Your daily workplaces might be more task-oriented, but I hope there'll be a few things. Probably everything I share with you today is not going to be directly related to your work environment, but I hope there are a few things that you can glean as far as the big picture strategies that inform my process. You know, and part of what I do in the Writing Center is train my tutors to help student writers too. So I'm teaching others to provide feedback to their peer writers. So we'll see. We'll see what works. One more question. I'm used to talking in the classroom, too, with a little more interaction, so I might call on you from time to time just to give me a little feedback so I don't feel so lonely up here, okay? One thing I do need to show of hands, how many of you enjoyed your college-level English classes? You can be honest. Okay, that's better than I thought. That's good, right? That's not so bad, because normally, let's see. Twice you enjoyed it so much. That's good. That's good. This is sort of, if people had to pick a symbol for their English professor, it's probably the red pen, right? And we're so much part of that stigma that I try not to use red pens, because it's just, you know, I don't want students to have that awful feeling that I'm bleeding all over their papers and red is too close to blood, right? And then ironically, this morning when I was trying to write a check in the car, all I could find to write with was a red pen, and I thought, well, that's telling for today. I'm about to go tell you about all this feedback. But the reason we try now to steer a little bit away from the red pen is because it has become synonymous in the psyche with everything's wrong, right? Everything that's wrong with my paper, you know? And that's part of feedback, right? The criticism is part of feedback. It's got to be. It's got to be there. But the metaphor, the big picture focus that we try to use in writing instruction, and I think it's a great umbrella focus for any sort of feedback, is the idea of growth. So this is the image we like to use, right? The idea of growth. One of our big catchphrases in writing center pedagogy is grow the writer. Right? Grow the writer. It's always forward-looking. Sometimes feedback feels like you're looking back. This was the project, and I'm going to tell you what went wrong, right? But with effective feedback, it really is a forward-looking process approach, right? So I'm always in the business of growing the writer. I don't know, many of you might be in the business of growing the worker, growing the colleague, growing, you know, yourself. The part of effective feedback involves self-reflection and self-reflective processes too, so that's part of what we're going to talk about. All right. So that image of, you know, the watering the student, nurturing into being their best selves, into being their best writer, into fulfilling their potential, and that's sort of the line of work I'm in on a daily basis, right? This is a working definition of feedback that I came across this summer in some professional development. And it's just feedback and evaluation is substantive. It should do more than point out error. It should be a learning experience from which students are able to understand what they did well, what they need to do to improve, and how to take the next step. I love this working definition because it's so task-oriented. It's so specific. And this is something I make students do in my literature classes. I make them break down an important sentence, a key sentence, into the key phrases. So I want to do that with you real quick, if you'll bear with me. So the first part of that working definition is it's substantive. It's content-based, right? So good feedback is based on the content, and I'll tell you more about that in a little bit, but that's key step number one. I like the way this is worded, too. It should do more than point out error. Pointing out error is part of it, right? That's necessary to positive growth, but it's more than that. And part of the more than that is leading a student to understanding, right? It's a learning experience. It should always be in any environment, any feedback that works well, whether it's self-reflective feedback or feedback we're giving a coworker or feedback we're giving a worker, right? Should always be a learning experience, or should have the goal of being a learning experience, right? That's our ideal. Right, and then I love the three parts of this. We're pointing out what they did well. And then here, one of my colleagues calls these opportunities for growth, right? What they need to do to improve. And then the last thing is strategy-based. What do we do for the next step? And that's key. What comes next? How do we do this next time? Right, so what's the next step? So just three big stages. Three big stages in effective feedback, right? And they translate loosely to the before, the during, and the after, right? That before step is something that's often skipped. And in my role as Writing Center Coordinator and in the professional development and training I do, that's the one that's most often emphasized, right? And so that, I'm going to spend a little bit of time with that, and I hope the information that I'm giving you is not too general about that, so we can stop and think about how it might translate into your work environments, right? because I've got some of the things that we use and how they work, so we might stop at that. But the first, we want to assess the big picture, right? Second, we want to provide the substantive comments, right? Provide the content. And third, plan the next step, right? So let's break that down a little bit. All right, I'm gonna tell you, when I was a brand new starting teacher, I taught at Bushan High School in Arnaville, Louisiana, and I was all of 21 years old, little bitty, right? I looked like a 16-year-old, scared as can be, green as could be, teaching overfilled high school classrooms in a wonderful high school. Bushan is a great high school. But, there's that potential for things to sort of spiral out of control. But I had an amazing next-door mentor teacher, Miss Sue Hooks, who taught civics, and she taught American history. She had been in the Arnaville school system forever. And she sort of took me under her wing. That was her natural role. She was a nurturer, right? And she showed me by example that the number one successful teaching strategy has to do with attitude, right? And I was so grateful for my high school teaching experience before I translated into the college teaching environment, because it really taught me to emphasize my teaching with my scholarship, right? And so Ms. Sue Hooks embodied that teacher who was about personal student growth, right? She cared about her students, and they knew it. Her expectations were very high because she knew the students were worthy of it. But her method of discipline was just like a good old-fashioned Southern mama. She'd shame them into good behavior, you know? I mean, and I would see her call some big old football player out into the hallway, and I was next door so I could eavesdrop a little bit. And she probably did it intentionally now looking back. But she'd have that big old football player out there, and she would say, "Now, Joe, look, you are a leader. You have a lot of influence with your peers. I count on you to set a good example in my classroom. I need you to show them what you're capable of, to lead them." You know, I mean, she would just, and those football players would have tears running down their faces. "Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am." They just did not want to disappoint her, right? And I could not be more grateful for that than I am for that kind of example. And I had those kinds of high school teachers. Stuart and I were blessed to have those kinds of high school teachers at Rapides. It was a community-based school, and they cared about us very much. They cared about the whole person, right? And so that just the mindset of it's about more than this task, right? It's about your potential as a student. And in your place, it's I care about you more than as a whole person beyond just this task that I'm evaluating, right? So that big picture attitude. You don't have to call your workers out into the hall and make them cry unless that works for you, right? But it might not work so well. But the whole approach to thinking about I care about you as a person beyond this task, right? And I care about your potential. And my expectations are high because I know you're worthy of them. I'm so grateful for that example, and it's something that stayed with me all the way through, right? Something I use on my own kids now, and I'm happy about that. And this is something we preach in composition theory all the time. It seems intuitive, but we sort of forget to organize our thoughts around this step, right? What is it that I truly need to accomplish? And who's my audience? Is this an in-house audience? Is this something within the office? Is this something for a client with which we have a history, right? What kind of feedback have we gotten from this client in terms of their expectations from us? What do we know about this client's expectations versus the person we were working with last week? Right, so that this is that pre-work that we often skip that can be very, very meaningful. Why are we doing this? Who are we doing this? For whom are we doing this, right? And how does that inform the decisions that we make, right? Because that helps us decide upon those clear expectations, which seems, again, it seems intuitive. We know what we want, right? And as a faculty member of the Writing Center, this is something that I guide faculty in different disciplines toward all the time. Setting clear expectations. And a lot of times faculty will say, "Well, I know what I want. I know what looks good when I see it," right? So they don't really have the outlines of their expectations clarified for themselves and can't communicate them clearly to the students, right? And this can be in any level of formality, depending upon what suits your work situation. You can set up a rubric, and I'm going to show a couple of examples of those in just a moment that we use, but you'd have to think about what translated into your work world. It could be just an informal list of this is the task or this is the job description, and these are the five or six things that we need from this task that we need to accomplish. Right, here's my list. And you could just rank them in order of importance. Which one is the most important? Put that one at the top of the list, right? And then work down from there. Sometimes sitting there up front to think that through makes all the difference in the end. And then when you have those clearly set expectations, it also translates into content-based feedback and the strategy for the next time. So that, if I had to put a big gold star by any of the things we've talked about so far, it's the taking the time to set forth clear expectations up front, that pre-work, right? That happens before the feedback even starts. Communicating for yourself and for your team members, for your colleagues, what needs to happen in this project? What are the five or six things that need to take place? So here's an example. My high school senior had to turn in a resume, and this was his teacher's rubric, right? So that's an example of something. You probably have seen these, maybe even used these. Anybody use a rubric lately? Other than for your kids? Yep, Sandy. this is our bread and butter in educational feedback. And it's, you know, the left-hand column has a list of the criteria. The ranking across the top is this is excellent level, this is average, and then unacceptable, right? And in the middle, the teacher has it sort of spelled out what does excellent look like, what does average look like, what does unacceptable look like. That can be a very useful tool. It might be more detailed than you need for a smaller task, but it certainly helps to have that list of expectations, right, the criteria. And you notice there are 5 categories, right? And then details under each category, but 5 big subheadings. So these are the things we want to focus on for this project, right? These are the things that really count and that really matter. And so I sold this one because this is one style, and then all right. This is one. I just collected a stack of 1001 papers this morning. So if anybody wants to practice giving effective feedback, I'll share. You want? And I have a purple pen, not a red one, if you want that. So this is mine. This is the style that over the years as I've kind of tweaked. This is the type of rubric that I've gone with now because I've got the criteria listed in the column there. But instead of saying, okay, so this is what excellent looks like, and this is what average looks like, and I changed some of the adjectives and things like that, I like better just saying, okay, this is the goal. Here it is, spelled out. And you either earned all of your points for that goal or not, right? And then I leave room for some starting comments, and then I'd give summative comments at the end, right? But I like saying, instead of trying to change it, to me it works better, but the other format or something like the other format might work better for you. But I like just spelling out in the left-hand column, this is what we're going for. When we're talking about introduction and thesis statement, this is what needs to happen here. Right, and then we can indicate the level of points. And the other thing is they're weighted. Like filling out the assignment and doing the format correctly is 3 points, whereas the introduction and the thesis statement with that key sort of focusing sentence is worth twice the number of points. Right, so that helps students see which areas are bigger in the picture than others. Right, I know you can't read the fine print. I just wanted you to see the way that shaped up. Are we good? Any questions? Good. All right. And so a couple things. So that was the beginning, and then as you move into actually giving feedback to someone, this is a lesson I've learned the hard way in teaching career. Sometimes students remind me of this in a sort of brutal way. Ask and listen first. We make lots of assumptions. We all do on a daily basis, right? Ask and listen. And this can be a genuine conversation. Try to be, I mean, and this is something I've reminded myself of, try to be as genuine as possible, right? As invested as possible. Tell me about this assignment. What did you think worked, right? What were some of the struggles you had? What did you think were some of the weaknesses? This would translate differently in your workplace, but sometimes when I jump in with a critique, right, I completely miss some of the things the students needed to let me know up front. The worst example ever was I had a student come to my office and she had missed 2 weeks of class. And I always, at the beginning of the semester, say, guys, attendance matters. This is a skill-based class. I need you to be here. We're in this to learn together. If something's going on in your life, you have to reach out to me. You have to let me know. I want to help you succeed. You know, all of those things. So in comes a student, Andrea, and sits in my office and had been gone for 2 weeks. And, of course, we had a major project during that time. And she sits down, and she's nervous. And, you know, she's – and I was exhausted and tired and not my best self. But anyway, she said, I'm sorry, Dr. Beard, I've been out. And I sort of jumped in and I said, Andrea, you missed a major project. You know, I can't accept late projects because of blah, blah, blah. And I started talking. She tears up, and then she said, I know, I'm sorry, I understand. She had been hospitalized for 2 weeks because she was suicidal. They had taken away her cell phone. She was a first-generation college student, and her family didn't know to, you know, it was one of those moments when I thought, could I have possibly handled that in a worse way? And it all could have been solved. You know, and it just at that point, she didn't need me to add to the guilt she already felt. You know, I mean, it was just, that's a lesson I learned the very, very hard way, and it always reminds me to listen first. Sometimes you'll get a basket full of excuses when you open that, right? And so that's where the rubric and the content-based feedback can really come in handy, because we can turn those excuses, well, I didn't have my computer and I didn't have the right program and so-and-so was sick, and you know what I mean? Say, okay, let's talk about strategies that we can use to be more successful next time, or if there a revision needs to happen, right? So we'll move on to that. But if we sometimes we save ourselves a lot of egg on the face if we stop and listen. And again, sometimes a student lets us know that an expectation wasn't clear, right? Or there was a misunderstanding in good faith, or they had to prioritize something else at this point and knew that they were, you know, making a choice there. And they can let me know that up front, and it makes for a more honest conversation. And graduate school, one of our professors would put check marks on our drafts, and then we had to make a revision, right? Well, she turned back the revised draft, and she asked a student, what on earth did you do? Everything I said was good. You took out of the paper, you know, everything I put a check mark by. And he said, oh, I thought the check marks were bad. When I was in high school, they would put check marks on the lines that had errors in them. So I took every, you know, and so, I mean, it might be just a simple misunderstanding, and you need to know that, right? Okay, so another thing that we think about, and this the rubric can help with this, are what we call HOCs and LOCs, which is a silly acronym for address higher order concerns first and then lower order concerns. And again, doing that upfront work. If you have your set of expectations in place, right, and you have them prioritized, then you know, okay, let's go with these higher order issues first and communicate clearly, set up some strategies for doing this effectively first, and then move down to the things that are lower on the list, right? And I always like to include some sort of blanket statement to say, okay, so we're going to address this thesis statement first because we really need to get that smoothed out, but in future drafts, we're going to work on blank, blank, and blank. So there's not this misunderstanding that, hey, when you get this thesis statement fixed, you've aced this thing, you're an A writer, right? Or your papers are great. So we can move on like that. My husband's in medicine, and so they use the term, he was an EMT when we were first married. They use the term triage, and I always think of HOCs and LOCs like triage, right? Address the medical situations that are the most urgent first, and then work down the list. And so that's kind of how we think of it in the environment of feedback. We get overwhelmed if we hear too much at once. So address the big things first and then end with a blanket statement. Later we'll address blank, blank, and blank, right? In talking with people about the topic of this conversation, people sort of split the difference. Some say I'm awful at giving feedback because I can only say the positive. Right, that was Jamie, by the way. And some people say I'm awful at giving feedback because I only say the negative, right? So thinking about the balance to try to address both. And again, if you have a set of criteria in place, you know what you're expecting, right? It gives you the specifics to talk about in terms of this was done very well, however, we'll focus on this aspect of the presentation or the task, right? So that, again, the specific criteria that you set up ahead of time can help you point out both what was done well and what needs improvement. And this is something that I learned through Writing Center, is focus on feedback rather than affirmation. And the distinction is that I'm going to go ahead and put it all up here. Affirmation is focused on the person. Now, we all need a little bit of affirmation, right? That's a good thing. That's good for our soul. But we want to move our project-based feedback into feedback that's focused on the project, right? Instead of focus on the person. You're a great person. I'm proud of you. That's good to hear, right? But both the positive and the negative feedback needs to be substance-based, focused on the project. And again, a lot of that can come from your set of criteria, right? And looking at the one that I had, how did the thesis statement, introduction, what about descriptive detail, the summary, the use of MLA format, those kinds of things are the criteria on that rubric, so I can talk specifically about those things instead of, you know, the effort of the person in general, right? And the other thing, there's summative feedback, which happens after the project, right? But if there's an opportunity to build informative feedback, which is during the project, right? If there are certain stages or points that would invite reflection, it's great to build in those moments so that change can happen while the project is still taking place or while the task is still taking place, right? And that's most of our English classes are sort of set up that way. Students work in using the process approach. Right, and so there's formative instruction along the way as they turn in, you know, topics and then first drafts and revised drafts and final drafts. You know, so that's part of that process approach we use that would carry over. Are there moments during the project, during the task, that would make for good checkpoints? Could be self-reflective, right, or could be meeting with a supervisor or someone like that. All right, and another sort of big picture theory is the idea of scaffolding. So when you're thinking about the next step, all right, here's where we are, right? And if this is where we are, what's the next step forward? What's the next major step we need to take? That's the plus one, right? That's the sort of Vygotsky theory of educational development, right? Here's where we are, how can we take it to the next step? How can we scaffold one more? Right, help the worker, help the writer, plan the plus one, right? And then that process continues. So the next one, hopefully they're one step higher, right? One step more successful, one step more confident. What's the next plus one, right? What can happen next? Right, and then let the person talk it back to you, right? And again, that helps avoid misunderstanding and miscommunication. Talk me through the next step. What did you hear, right? What are your plans, right? What are the strategies that we can put in place? And the best thing is if you can put it in writing, because then it's a reference point, right? Something to come back to as they're working on the next project. Okay, so what, because a lot of times when we're talking, we're getting verbal feedback, our emotions get in the way. Right, we're sort of processing it, but we're also hearing a lot of, you know, a lot of personal criticism, even if it's not there, or we're busy thinking about other things that sort of went on during the project. And so, if we can put feedback in writing, during or after the fact, it helps us sort of have a set of standards that are in place, have some of those strategies in place to go forward to the next step. I like this. Because feedback is so task-oriented, it's practical, right? Especially if it's content-based, it really has a positive effect on the learner in my environment. It could be on the worker in your environment, on your colleagues, right? John Hattie and his team spent 15 years researching, doing sort of a meta-analysis of the way students learn. They worked with over 800 students, right, and looked at the strategies that worked best. And growth-based feedback was the number one, had the most impact on student learning, content-based skills, right, because it's directly project-associated, right, especially when that feedback built in strategies for moving forward. All right. I'm just curious, because I've talked a lot about what we do in my field and what we do in writing center studies, what I do in the English classroom, what we do in the education world, right? Big picture concepts of how feedback can work. Do you mind talking back to me a minute? Tell me, what did you hear or that might work, that might translate into the world in which you work. Let me think. In the writing,
Something that someone else is going to read.
To understand. That's exactly right. So, well, and I'm talking about projects in general. So the projects that I'm describing could be essays in the English 101 class, and they would be something that classmates and the professor would need to read to understand. Or it could be senior level projects that students are writing for conference presentation at an undergraduate conference, right? So they'd all be things. Like the essays, the examples I were given were things, yes, that were written in an academic setting, classic essay assignments.
And the real test is, are the readers or the listeners?
That's exactly right. That audience.
Can they get an accurate picture of what?
That's exactly right. Yep. Can your audience see the purpose and the point of your essay? Exactly. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's a great question, actually. Yeah. So did you raise your hand a minute ago, or you didn't?
No,
yeah, okay.
I love now more because they pushed me to be more than I was, and that's why I hated it.
Yeah, right.
But creative writing, you have to be able to color outside of the box.
Yeah.
And the thing that I'm questioning is, how do you set structure but yet not limit that creativity where you have to think about it?
Right, and so the rubric that I showed you just a moment ago was for a more structured essay prompt, but even students were turning in narrative writing assignments today, and even so, there are a set of expectations, right? And as Mr. Scott was saying, there are things that make this kind of project work, right? Descriptive detail that you use, the overall structure and organization of the essay. And again, I'm talking specifically about my field, but that set of criteria, right? And then the student is creative within those, but those expectations are there. There's a clear beginning. There's a clear middle with supporting detail with development. There's a closure at the end of the essay. So those sort of big categories are there, and then the student can fulfill them in lots of thousands of creative and interesting ways. Right, so that's again how something like that kind of set of criteria, and again, I'm using the examples from my English classroom and from my writing classroom because that's where I live. Right, that wouldn't be the kinds of criteria you would put on something that you were using in your workplace, except for maybe two or three of you in here. Right, but it's the kind of thing that says this is what we're looking for this task. This is what this successful task means to me. These five things. Right, Where is this project that you're showing me? Where does it line up against those things? Right. And something else that I use that kind of helps clarify that for students is we do this. You know, when we're writing a narrative essay, we bring in examples of narrative essays, and students have the rubric, and so they're comparing. What would you say about how the student achieved this criteria? Would you give them 5 points out of the five? Would you give them 3 points out of the five? Now, why? Where would this need to be improved? What would you do to add to it? So the rubric is something the students need up front too, or the workers need up front. They need to know what the expectations are as they're working on the project, right? And they need to be able to look at other examples of that kind of writing or that kind of working to see why is this working or not, right? So some of the way that we work around the subjectivity, right, is that we have a set of common expectations for a genre of writing, even though they differ from genre to genre, and we use models, we use examples, and evaluate those together, you know. Yep. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely.
Of that yeah. Find that student or has more gifts than even the instructor.
Yeah. Oh, without a doubt.
To know how to and handle that effectively.
That's right. Let them shine. That's right. That's right. Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. Yep.
I think an area in my life where this may be very applicable would be parenting.
Yeah.
You know, I give my kids the feedback sometimes, and they don't always want it.
Yeah.
Maybe the way I'm giving it, you know, the time I choose to give it.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
And so if I can be more strategic about the timing and the context of my feedback, then, you know, we can...
That's a great thing to think about. And it also goes back to that, at least be open to listening first, right, before we launch in with the criticism. I'm surprised, to the point of annoying my kids, how frequently I carry over things I've learned in my teaching pedagogy into my child rearing, and probably drive my kids crazy with that, but, you know... it's good practice, right? But I agree.
I think that he brought up something that really kind of hit me as I was listening to your presentation. He mentioned how you can relate it a lot to parenting.
Yes.
But on another level, I think there's a lot of good content that you can also use if you're in business and you're
I hope so, yeah.
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 You still have to be able to understand who you're working with.
Yeah.
To get the best out of the people you're working with.
Right.
You need to know who they are. You need to understand their strengths and weaknesses.
That's right.
You have to be able to be clear in explaining what your expectations are, because a lot of assumptions ruin.
That's right.
Projects.
That's right. Right.
And they don't succeed or don't do well because it was never really cut out for them.
That's right. And then they start feeling like failures and disappointments, right, when, you know, some of that upfront listening and discussion back and forth, you know, that sort of in-the-moment feedback of what's working, what's not working, why are you feeling uncomfortable with this, can maybe help redirect some of that. That's exactly right. Yep. I agree.
I wasn't going to say anything because I'm trying to impress my priest and his bride.
Well, they're lovely, yep.
And this probably, you wouldn't even consider it, but some of you know I'm in the middle of a campaign. And when you affected me, some of the things that you said reach out to me.
Well, good.
You know, meeting people door to door.
Yeah.
I don't know what they expect of me, but that grid, those two grids you that's something that I need to sit down and
And I feel like maybe that's right. That's one of the big things I want to emphasize, because it's something that I see that happens among my colleagues all the time. They don't have their expectations clarified for themselves, so then it's hard to communicate. So if there's one take home from this, you know, it would be that encouragement. Clarify those expectations, because then you set them up front. Your worker has them to use. They help you with content-based feedback, and they give you some of the focusing points for the next stage. So that, to me, is a big take-home, is set those expectations. And they are always a work in progress, because you go through it once and you realize, I didn't emphasize this enough, or I didn't focus on this aspect enough, and I really need to clarify that for my students or for my employees. Yep. Yeah.
And for me to sell myself,
yeah.
For me to stand up there and say, hey, how great I am, and look what I've done.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
important.
I can see that. Yep, absolutely. So that kind of self-assessment would be excellent. That's good. Set your goals and criteria out. That'd be great. Okay, yep. Yes, sir.
Actually, feedback needs to be built into any task.
Mm-hmm.
Code is not
Yeah.
We've gotten to the end where the patient's well, it's a better move the ICU.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Go over everything.
That's all. Yeah.
It's not a session of blame, it's a session of what can we do better?
Yeah.
Feedback and saying, we encourage one another and we ask, could we have done this differently?
Right.
Could we have done this?
Yep.
This? And it's important to build strength in your team, to build strength in your workers, but it also helps you grow.
Yep.
And to me, any task that you're trying to get better at, you need to have it built in there that, you know, when you've made your first effort and then you sit down and feedback and look at, say,
that's right.
You didn't do this good, but you do it.
Yep.
You do it, you don't want to do it again.
Yep.
And this is critical for any task.
Yeah.
Just a teaching tool.
That's right. That's what I was hoping would be important, but I love to hear those processes that work. And you're right, the task isn't over until you've reflected upon the successes and the strengths to retain and the areas for improvement. That's right, that's good. I like that. Are we out of time? You what a gracious group. Thank you so much for letting me share with you.